welcome to another episode of Conversations on Transformation, our series of interviews from the STEG Annual Conference 2024. My name is Tim Phillips, and I'm at NYU Abu Dhabi to talk to the experts who understand the challenges and opportunities of structural transformation and economic growth. The process of creative destruction describes how businesses that are failing are replaced by new, more entrepreneurial firms. But what is the effect on business and on the economy if those firms find it hard to go out of business? Soumitra Chatterjee of Johns Hopkins University is one of the authors of a study of firm exit in India. When I met him, I started by asking him why policymakers should give their attention to how firms close down, as well as how they start up.
There are two main economic reasons. Partly, barriers to exit are also barriers to entry. But if we were to break that down, if a firm knows ex ante that it would be hard for them to exit, say, things don't go well and you need to close down shop, then knowing that there are barriers to exit, some potential entrants might not enter in the first place. And that could cause a drag on productivity and growth. And the second reason is that productive resources like labor and capital could get stuck with incumbent firms who are not doing well, who should have ideally exited, and those resources should have been reallocated to the more productive firms in the economy. So these two channels together could have big implications for aggregate development of a country.
It seems weird that barriers to exit even exist. Why do they exist?
Partly with good intentions. So in many countries, and not only developing countries, in many advanced nations like Italy, for example, and France, you want to protect workers from losing their jobs and livelihood. You want to protect firms that may be in distress during transitional time. So for example, during COVID, many firms were prevented from exiting. So when the policies are made, I think they're often well-intentioned, but over time they evolve into something that can have unintended consequences. So to give you some examples of barriers to exit, the classic would be labor laws. We want to protect workers, so we try to over-regulate hiring and firing of workers. But then the letter of the law is one thing, implementation is another, and things like court congestion or uncertainties of the judicial process can quickly turn these laws into barriers to exit.
If a business isn't doing well, it stops trading, it comes dormant in the jargon. Does that matter? Does it really have to exit? I know it mucks up the statistics, but is there any benefit then from it exiting formally?
The key thing would be that if it locks up resources that are productive from flowing into other firms that could actually generate output using those resources, then in an economic jargon, what we say is that there is resource misallocation, i.e. resources are with firms that are not essentially producing economic output. And in that sense, it can be harmful.
In this work, you focused on India's manufacturing sector. Why did you choose this sector in particular?
A couple of reasons, direct and indirect. Mm-hmm. So in India, we have had a development puzzle that has been long-standing, which is over the course of India's development, India transitioned from being an agricultural economy to being more services-driven, low-skill services and high-skill services.
Yeah.
And we didn't fully develop a manufacturing core, which Danny Roderick calls premature deindustrialization. And there has been a lot of work in understanding why India did not develop a manufacturing sector. We wanted to explore this new channel contributing to the same problem. The other is availability of good data. So India has very good data on manufacturing firms, which captures, so you mentioned dormancy. Most data sets don't capture what firms are doing during their dormant phase.
Uh-huh.
For our work, it is crucial that we have data on the capital used by firms, how much wages are getting paid during phases of dormancy, and how how much time firms need to transition from being active to dormant to exit and so on. And so availability of data is another. But the biggest reason is that exit rates amongst manufacturing plants in India are the lowest in the world. And lowest not only compared to the United States, but also amongst countries at similar levels of development like Vietnam. So that made it a classic lab to study.
And that's because the barriers to exit in India are higher than in other comparable countries?
That's the conclusion of our research.
And does it take longer then in that case to go out of business in India?
While that is not the direct focus of our own research, the government of India did a survey amongst Indian firms, and the official estimates are that even if nothing is wrong with the firm, if you just want to close down shop, the legal paperwork, getting clearances, and so on can take up to 4 years.
Wow.
Which is, compared to the United States, where it would take less than 2 months, that's a lot higher.
Yes. And other obvious effects for the manufacturing sector in India?
The obvious ones are that the employment is lower than optimal, value added is lower than optimal, productivity is lower than optimal, and one could benefit on all those margins, including entry of new productive firms who would then innovate and generate more output, which is not happening at this time.
So given all these quite surprising facts, you model this. What are you trying to capture in this model?
So let me step back for a second and tell you why do we take that modeling approach.
Yes.
So in the course of our research and kind of studying this problem, we realized that there are parts of the exit barriers that are measurable. So the effects of labor laws, there is work by Tim Besley and Robin Burgess, which is fundamental in this literature. There is work on the absence of bankruptcy laws contributing to this problem. There is work on court congestion by Ezra Oberfield and Johannes Boehm, which are all speaking to the same problem, and these are measurable barriers. But then a lot of the problem comes from unmeasurable factors. For example, uncertainties of the court process. So labor laws, for example, protect regular workers but not contract workers from getting fired. But who decides who is a contract worker? And ultimately, it goes to a court which decides it. Mm-hmm. And those kind of uncertainties can give rise to not directly quantifiable exit barriers. Mm-hmm. And hence, we decided to take a more macro approach, which is we write down a dynamic firm model, which tells us what should happen in an efficient world. And when we compare the predictions of the model to what we see in the data, and that lets us back out how large exit barriers would be.
You know, I can imagine this would get pretty complicated pretty quickly. Which exit barriers do you then decide to use in the model? How do you manage to make this tractable?
So there are some exit barriers that have been explicitly modeled. For example, labor adjustment and capital adjustment. The remainder is captured as a residual, but informed by moments in the data that aid identification. So for example, we focus on the transitions of firms from being active to being dormant to exit. And that is like a key feature of the data that allows us to estimate how large exit barriers would be. So for example, if there were no exit barriers, then you would expect that a firm goes from being active, gets hit with a negative shock, and very quickly exits. But if the firm is then spending a long time in dormancy and taking a longer time to exit, that tells us that there are some frictions that are keeping the firm from making the efficient decision.
So what can it tell us about the impact of exit barriers on India's economy, India's growth?
If the less efficient states had institutions that behaved like the more efficient states of India, then we expect that employment, for example, should go up in the ballpark of 30%. Firm entry should go up in the ballpark of 60%. But we should take these numbers with a grain of salt because we are still fine-tuning the model and making sure everything is right. We expect that the average firm in India has to pay about twice the annual sales revenue of the average firm as an exit cost. That is about 2 million Indian rupees.
Gosh. Even as you say, this is works in progress. The sort of numbers you're getting out of this are really quite large. Is this just a problem in India for the manufacturing sector, or is it generally across the whole economy?
It's hard to say without having access to explicit data. You don't get the type of micro data that you have for manufacturing plants for services. But I can tell you heuristically, you can measure exit rates in services. They are a little bit higher than manufacturing, but not that much. And again, when you look at how court cases proceed on these things, you get a sense of why this might be happening. So for example, the Industrial Disputes Act or the labor laws that protect workers was written for factory workers. But there's a court case which was deciding whether computer programmers, those working in, let's say, TCS or Infosys type of companies, whether they can be classified as workmen and therefore be protected by labor laws. Now, I don't know which way the judgment went, but just the time it would take for that case to get resolved is also an exit barrier for firms in the services sector. So I imagine there are some exit barriers that affect all parts of the economy, but there would some that would specially be true about, let's say, the low-skill manufacturing firms.
Soumitra, you seem to be the sort of person who could do something about this. I'm going to make you the policymaker. What would you change? What laws would you change? What policies would you change to improve this situation?
I think it's pretty hard. I have actually had some previous experience working with the government, and being a policymaker is actually not easy. You're trying to balance multiple strands. The government, I think, is already taking some steps in the right direction. So, for example, there is a national law which is now up for adoption by the states that would raise the threshold which regulates hiring and firing of workers from firms that are 100 workers and above to 300 workers and above. Changes like those would go a long way in relaxing these things. Making sure that dispute resolution is quick is another no-brainer, but it's easier said than done. Like, India is a country with 1.4 billion people, with not as many courts, with many cases pending. So these are not easy reforms. Some things will happen with development over time. I think a lot of records becoming digital and India making big strides on that front, all are kind of small factors that will contribute towards easing these things. But I don't think there is like one magic bullet that one can bite and change things overnight.
And also, it sounds to me that this isn't just about laws and regulations, but also the way they're interpreted and
applied.
That's
exactly right.
These would also be institutional changes as well. And we know that changing institutions, especially in a country the size of India, can be very slow and take a long time. Is this going to be a quick fix, or are we talking about years, possibly decades?
I don't know. That's very hard for me to answer. I mean, some changes can take place overnight. I'm picking up an example from a completely different perspective, but some years ago, India passed, for example, the Right to Information Act, and that went a long way in solving many issues for the country. And so there are some changes that can take place overnight, but there are other institutions that will take longer to reform. But I guess that's the course of development.
And as you say, a lot of these barriers to exit are well-meaning, and they are politically convenient as well. We know from the financial crisis and from COVID that it's very popular to protect jobs. Is it possible that this political expedience will get in the way of any reform?
I'm not too experienced in politics, so let me not comment on that. But there are ways to get around it. For example, I think if India could implement an unemployment insurance type policy that the US has, which would not put the cost explicitly on the firm, but at the same time allow workers a smooth transition into other jobs, policies like that could go a long way into easing some of these things in a manner that is politically more implementable.
It's a wonderful example of how creative destruction is an important force, but also much more subtle and nuanced than perhaps many of us understand. Soumitra, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The paper is called No Country for Dying Firms, Evidence from India, and the authors are Soumitra Chatterjee, Kalyami Padmakumar, Kala Krishna, and Yingyang Zhao.
You have been listening to Conversations on Transformation, recorded live at the STEG Annual Conference Week 2024 at NYU Abu Dhabi. STEG stands for Structural Transformation and Economic Growth, and you can find out more about it at steg.cepr.org.